CliffCentral.com.
Yes, good morning. I couldn't even wait for this to finish.
Bullshit.
No more bullshit. Yes, Monday. No more bullshit. That's right. Good morning, everybody. I had my, hey, you got your WhatsApp status thing? Like, for a couple of weeks, I didn't, because I don't update that. Who updates that? I saw it was no more bullshit, because I took it from the song, right? No more bullshit. And someone wrote, like, this WhatsApp to me. Someone I haven't spoken to in months, and like, is there something wrong? Like, who's giving you shit?
No.
I was like, no. And I didn't even want to explain it, so I just changed my status back to, you know, available. You know, which is the first default.
Yes.
You always choose available if you don't know what else to say. You know, people try to be very creative with their WhatsApp status, and it ends up being a disaster. Just say, hi, I am from Earth.
I think mine's just a monkey or something.
You've got a monkey?
I think so.
That's great. Check quickly. I want to see that. Yes. Good morning, everybody. Here we are. We woke up extra early on this freezing cold day to be with you. Isn't that nice? Isn't that terrific?
People of Earth, how are you?
Yes, how are you? Mm. Yes, good morning. So let's say hello to the whole cast and crew this morning. We have Leanne Moll.
Yes, I'm still recovering from the vagina song, which I haven't heard in ages.
Oh, yes.
Your favorite.
Sia Sangweni's here.
Good morning.
Ben Karpinski's here.
Hi, guys. I got to say, that vagina song always sounds like it comes from Adam's apple, though.
That's
what makes it kind of ironic for me.
Oh, Ben.
Now, if you see the music video, you might have another reason to think that. And then Nolo Healy.
What's up, kids?
Good morning, Nolo.
Good morning.
Who is standing by to take your calls and chat to us this morning. And I'm here, finally, back from Germany.
Yay.
I was away for the whole last week. I must tell you, I had a really interesting trip. And we're going to put together a podcast series so you can see exactly what we got up to. Just, you know, if you're interested. Because there might be people who are interested. And that's what we try to do, put together interesting podcasts, give you things to listen to while you're stuck in traffic and while you're trying to improve your mind. That's really all the podcast's there for. It's for you to improve your mind or give you something to do while you're doing other things.
Please tell me you have some clips for edit.
We've got a whole series. So, yes, Greg's got the whole lot down.
Video clips?
No.
Oh.
No, I didn't really take any video. You know, I took a lot of pictures.
With bears.
Yes. I was. So the whole of Berlin, the symbol of Berlin is a bear. It's that's Berlin. I came up with that afterwards.
It
is a bear because the province of Brandenburg, which Berlin is in, the symbol is a bear, and there used to actually be bears in that area.
Oh.
They hunted them all out in the 1700s, but there used to be bears. The black bear is the symbol of Berlin, and it's on their coat of arms and everything else. So all around town, you know how we have these cows? You know these painted ceramic cows that are all over Johannesburg?
Yeah.
I don't think they're in other parts of South Africa. They might be. I don't know. But remember, we used to have those, so they've got these bears all over. Some of them are standing on all fours. Some of them are standing up. Some of them holding a tray.
As bears do.
Yeah, some of them are holding up the earth. They're doing all kinds of stupid things. Like bears, I don't know a lot of bears. I've never seen one in the wild. But these bears, they're a feature of Berlin. So they've got them outside different, you know, department stores and major traffic intersections. And
it's like it's a global exhibition. When I was in Rio for the World Cup, they were all along the Copacabana.
Bears.
Must have the exact same bears.
Oh, wow.
Photographed.
Maybe they took them from Berlin and returned at least half of them.
They're absolutely amazing because when I was there for obviously the World Cup, they themed them to countries.
Okay.
So
they're all painted in.
Yeah, so they're a canvas for anything you really want because they're eye-catching and then you strap whatever you want on.
Yeah. Well, I tried.
Bears.
It was fun. It was a little side project of mine because everywhere we went for these different lectures and classes and presentations, we'd pass a bear, so I would take a picture with
them. Yeah, they're great. They're great for talents to have things like that.
It's nice. It gives you something fun to do in between all the other stuff. And as I said to you, I did a lot of touristy things, and I've suddenly become really interested in German history again. So I spent a bit of time. I got back on Saturday and spent a bit of time just kind of going through some old books of mine. I haven't really
You know, I love history, right? It's my favorite thing to do, to spend some time looking at that stuff. So I just went through it and refreshed my memory and kind of tried to place all the things and people and places that I'd seen into a timeline. Give it a context. You know, it's just, I always think about the personality of a nation. I think about the personality of South Africa often. I think about the way Germans are and what we mock about them and what we think is stereotypical about Germans. And because most of it's true.
Mm.
And then I think, well, what do people think of us?
Mm.
What do they make of South Africans when they come here and they meet us? They're like, oh, Jesus, those people. What's wrong with them?
I can't say that we're predictable. We're also different. And there's so many cultures.
So to illustrate the point, and yeah. I do love this about South Africa. I'm walking through Berlin with Greg, and he's off to go and buy a baby thing because, you know, he's having a baby next year.
Yeah.
Very excited about that. He was commissioned to go and find some baby-carrying device. It's like a backpack for a baby or whatever it is. I don't know how you describe these things. And so I said, I'll walk with you to this shopping sort of area. And it's probably about 4 or 5 in the afternoon, maybe a bit later, because the shops close really late. So we're walking, and I hear laughter, like loud laughter from this restaurant that it's kind of just diagonally across the street from us. I'm like, those are our people. Those are South Africans. Or they're the people on the trip with us.
Yeah.
I go there, it's them.
Yep.
In the whole of Berlin, the only people laughing were the South Africans. Because Germans are very serious. They don't know how to laugh. They only learnt about 40 years ago.
They're still practicing.
The first German learnt to laugh maybe, yeah. The first German he had tried it and the other Germans cast him out.
What is this? Yeah. This sensation?
Why are you laughing? It is very serious. They threw him out, and then he was out in the wilderness for some time.
This ha-ha sensation of yours?
Why you are acting? What is this? Why you are putting this on? Why you make that ugly noise? Rather to shout. We're on the train. This is so stereotypically German. So we're on the train, and there's this girl, Siviwe, and she's going, ha-ha-ha-ha-ha! You know, because she's laughing. She's having a good time. This German woman... She's obviously from East Berlin, which is even more, you know, so they were repressed. I mean, Jesus, they had those Soviets, and you know how funny the Soviets are.
Mm-hmm.
This woman, she's got her bag, she's wearing a big jacket, and it wasn't cold, and she looks at Siviwe with this utter hatred. She looks at her and she goes, here in Germany, we are not so loud.
Ooh.
Ooh. And all of us weren't exactly. Ooh. All of us were like, what?
We are not so loud.
We are not so loud. So obviously, all the Germans who are with us are apologizing. They're like, no, we're not all so rude. We're like, yeah, we know that. But that is kind of what we expect from a German.
Yeah.
We don't. No one was offended. Nobody was like, oh, this is a, you know, we're upset. Just like. Ah, there's the Germany that we thought we knew. Hiding there under that woman's coat.
Jeez, that is something. To even and say it, though.
I would have walked up to her and gone, ha ha ha, in her face.
So we were... Pumi went in to buy something at the apothecary, which is like the, you know...
The chemist.
The chemist. So she walks in, and it's me and Cecilia and Greg and Pumi. Pumi goes to the counter to buy, I don't know what it was. She wanted... headache tablets or whatever. So we're standing in the shop. And we're talking at normal volume. Mm. South African normal volume. This woman goes, shh. It's like they want everything. This is the nation that made more fucking bombing noises in the 1930s and 40s than any other country on earth. Boom, 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 boom. Boom! Ah, Luftwaffe! Boom! Boom!
And sirens!
They're fighting, they're shouting at each other, and now we must be quiet!
Now they want some shush.
Yeah!
Jesus. I would have laughed so hard.
I didn't know what to say to these people. I was like, you really have a thing about being quiet, huh?
How odd.
I think it's because especially for East Berliners, they were told to shut up. You know, if you made a noise, the Stasi would just pick you up in one of those vans, just pull you off the street, put you in one of those ugly little vans. It's called a Barocco or something. And it's got cages in it. They'd put you in one of those cages, put a blanket over your head. You didn't know where you were going. We went to visit the prison that they'd take these people to. They put them in a cell that you could... not even a meter by a meter. So you couldn't sit down. You couldn't lie down. You had to stand in a cold concrete cube.
This is the one in the suburban area.
Jesus. Did I tell you about that? Yeah. I told on Friday.
Yeah, it sounded freaky.
Oh, God. Oh, what a horrible place the Stasi prison was.
And they would keep you there for indefinitely while you're standing.
One of the girls was like, Madiba had it good. That's how bad it was in that prison. No, seriously, it was horrible.
Oof.
And maybe if we'd been through that history, if we'd had the same thing, we wouldn't have had a sense of humor by the end of it.
This is true.
Yeah, there's also that.
You know, I was talking to a friend of mine who also likes German history, and she was saying, what you got to remember is that after World War II, they actually made the village, the townspeople of every little village near a concentration camp, they made them go in and they made them bury those people. Those corpses that were lying in heaps, they made the townsfolk, the children, the women, whoever was around, they made them bury them and they made them look at what they'd done. Even if they didn't know about it, because they, you know, a lot of Germans claimed, and maybe rightly, they didn't, because, you know, a lot of people, they kind of live in their silos. Most South Africans, white South Africans, you ask them about apartheid, and they're like, yeah, well, we knew that it was this different, black and whites were treated differently, but we didn't know it was so bad for the blacks. You hear this from white people. And we didn't have much of a press. The press told white people what they wanted them to think. They told black people what they wanted them to think. And white people wouldn't go into a township. They just assumed, oh, well, you know, they live like, maybe like we do, but just differently. Just maybe they don't have as much or whatever. Because we knew that there were two separate systems, right?
Mm-hmm.
But didn't you hear these people in Germany and they're like, oh, you didn't know. They didn't care. They made them, the Allied commanders made them go in there and clean up, man. And then you see these videos, if you look at the 1940s, after 1945, you look at these videos of all these German women. They say that not one woman between the age of 12 and 60 was not raped by a Russian soldier after the war or during that 1945 final march in Berlin. But you look at these videos, you see these women with buckets and wheelbarrows, and they're busy, and they're smiling in the videos. They're like looking at the camera and smiling. They got their little pigtails and, you know, they look like Germans. They've got the apron on and they're busy like loading rubble into these and passing the bucket down the line of women. Those women cleaned up all the rubble. They cleaned up all the mess after World War II because there were no men around. The men had all been killed.
Wow.
It was old people, really young kids, and these women. Mm. They cleaned up the place. I mean, listen, that's your history. You're also not going to find people very funny on a train when they're being loud.
I don't even feel like laughing now.
Yeah, exactly. I sent Leanne a clip last night and she was so cross with me.
It was a dog clip.
Oh, no.
And it was this story.
Man. It's like, yeah, it's nice.
Where the man's packing for a trip and his Labrador is looking, his golden retriever is looking at him longingly, tries to get into his suitcase, and it's playing this sad music.
It is weird.
I started crying. Then eventually the dog packs
his
own little bag with a water bowl and its ball and comes chasing him down the street.
Aww. It's this little Labrador and it's all fluffy and watches the guy packing his bag. Then it goes and climbs into the bag that he's trying to pack. But listen to this Jap music. So you like, you get sad. Listen, it's like a Disney, you know those kids, those Disney things?
Yes.
So Leanne says to me, I'm not even coming in tomorrow. I need to recover.
So sad.
Right? This weird Japanese music.
No, this music is too much.
And then he's walking down the street. The dog comes with its little box. And it's to take me with you. Then he hugs the dog. And
that's very common.
I was sobbing.
So this little Japanese dog clip got Leanne all upset.
Look, the exact same thing happens with my cat and I go.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, my cats also get into my bag.
Cats don't get,
get into your bag.
I've seen stories where people pitch up on holiday and they've got a cat in their bag.
No, what?
Yeah, they love suitcases.
Uh-oh. That could be a problem because it travels in the cargo hold. Listen, the worst part of travel is the travel.
Yeah.
I didn't have a bad trip there at all. I loved it. And I'm going to give 100 points out of 100 to Lufthansa on the way there. On the way back, different kind of experience. I had a window seat, which I'd specially... I like a window seat. You lean up against the side. Mm. It was an economy. It didn't have a window. What's the point of a window seat without a window?
I've seen it happen to one person before, and I just thought that's the unluckiest person on earth. And then I saw it happen to you.
It was hilarious. Look, I didn't hate it. I wouldn't say I had a shitty time.
Mm.
But, ugh, I ran because we were late. Can I bore you with a story for 2 minutes?
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I'll time you.
All right, so we take off from Berlin. What is the one thing you know about the Germans? They are punctual.
Punctual.
Wir sind pünktlich. Right, not these ones. I don't know what was going on there. They must have had the worst kind of Germans. Maybe they'll blame it on immigrants. These guys, they took such a fucking long time at Berlin Airport to go through, you know, when you go, they process you at security, put you through the scanners and all that stuff. You have to unload, put your little liquids in a plastic thing so they could see into it so you're not...
They're checking for cats as well.
Yeah, and you're not Osama bin Ladening the place or anything, you know. So they, but they took so long. We left there. Must have been 40 minutes late. Now, I only had an hour to get off the Berlin flight and get onto the Frankfurt flight. 1 hour. So it needed to be pünktlich.
Yeah.
Well, we landed. I was watching the clock. I was like, I'm going to have to spend an extra day in Frankfurt now. And Frankfurt's boring. I thought, I was so looking forward to getting back to South Africa Saturday morning. You get the weekend to unravel and settle in and, you know, sort out the little gifts you bought everyone. I've got your gifts here. I'll give them to you now. And it was so cool. Like I was ready to, I was going to spend the day in, wasn't cool. It was irritating. But I mean, I'd resigned myself to the fact that I'm not going to make it. Because you have to go through immigration. And then I know the South African flight takes off from the furthest gate. It's a kilometer and a half down this passage, easily. It's a marathon. And I'm looking at my watch going, there's no way I'm going to make it there. There's no way. I got maybe maximum 15 minutes for the plane to get to the gate and for me to get out and make it to the next one. So I just thought, this is never going to happen. It's a disaster. So everybody on the plane is now catching a connecting flight. So they're all really, you know, tense. You can feel the tension. So the plane hasn't even stopped at the gate yet. And people get up to grab their bags. And the captain's like, no, you have to sit down. I'm not allowed to taxi if you're all standing up. So this adds another 5 minutes. Now I'm like, we're truly fucked now. Anyway, we got there. I took off like a bat out of hell down that corridor. I got to immigration. I was panting. The guy's like, is there something wrong, sir? I was like, shit. No. I'm just running because I'm trying to catch my connecting. He takes my passport and he looks at every... You know when they do every page?
Just because they can.
Well, he could see I'm in a hurry. He doesn't... He's like, I'm going to fuck with
you. You're acting irregular. He's looking for your South American trips.
Yeah, so I'm like, you know what? No, I'm really not going to make it. Get through there. And I ran. Man, I didn't even... I knew where to go because I've been to that airport 4 times this year. I just ran like my life depended on it. I was wheezing and huffing and puffing by the end of it like the big bad fucking wolf. I got to that gate. I must have been flustered. I must have been red in the face. I was like, this is my passport.
Sweating like a bummer.
Jesus. They look at me like, all right. I made it. I got onto the plane. I didn't care what seat I was in. You could have put me in the toilet. I would have been happy.
I can imagine
how special your face must have been because now you're panting like a bomber, as Leanne said. To sit down at your window seat to find there's no window. That must have been the real clincher.
I had a bit of claustrophobia.
Here, Ben, here's something for you.
Oh, thank you.
I've been stuck in Frankfurt before overnight.
Here's something for you.
Wow.
Yeah.
I knew you'd catch that, Will.
A sportsman.
I actually just banged the microphone.
Yeah, no.
Okay, we need a moment of silence for this now.
All right. So you could say what you got.
I have a Trump keyring, but somehow, is that Trump's app? Squeeze
the keyring, watch what happens.
If I squeeze a keyring, Trump takes a crap on my keyring.
You squeeze the keyring and Trump's asshole opens
That's
up. And
disgusting.
It's amazing that Angela Merkel managed to go mainstream with this product.
Yeah, she actually was commissioned the whole
plugging them at the airport. Yeah.
Now, the horrible thing about this is I'll start using it in meetings or something, just as something to fidget with.
That's why I thought it would be fun for you to have.
Oh, this is one.
It's actually called a fidget shitter.
Okay,
I got a Rick keyring.
A Rick from Rick and Morty keyring.
That's amazing. Thank you, Gareth. That's the greatest thing ever.
I think the last time I was in Germany, I got you a Rick and Morty.
It's like a weapon.
Thing.
That is really cool.
It is. It is a weapon. It's like a ninja star.
I will always be grateful to Ben for introducing me to Rick and Morty, which is going to be one of the best shows ever.
Yeah.
And then for Leanne and Nolo, I got you, that's a very fancy Muji pen. Muji is this Japanese shop. They make all these really like super efficient, really cool, really classic, really simple Japanese things.
Oh, wow.
So
mine is pink.
Yeah,
yours is blue.
Yours is pink, yours is blue.
Yeah.
And then I got your little Brandenburg Gate magnet as well.
Oh, is that what it is?
A tourist thingy. Yeah.
Nice.
So cool.
Yes.
These are very nice gifts, Gareth.
I tried to be. You know, I actually enjoyed shopping for gifts this time. I hate it usually.
Why did you enjoy shopping this time?
Well, because I found cool things. I had time.
Variety.
And thank God I didn't leave it to the airport, because you always do that, right? You think. And I would have been running through the airport going, no, I don't have gifts for everyone as well.
It's quite funny that the Donald Trump shitter, it was made in China.
China.
Yeah. It's big China at the bottom of the pants.
Well, we've got a lot of news to get to. We've got a lot of calls to take. I want to hear what your thoughts are. I want to see what's going on. Oh, by the way, did I tell you about the dinner that we had with Stefan, our listener there?
You said you hung out with him.
Yeah, Stefan Panzer. He took us out for dinner, Pumi and Greg and I, and we had a very nice Vietnamese dinner in a part of Kreuzberg in southern Berlin. It was very nice of him. He was very good to us. He took us to Tempelhof, which is the old city airport. It turned it into a park. People walk their dogs there, and they kite surf and all that kind of thing.
Hmm.
Skateboards and all kinds of things. Did I mention to you how the whole of Berlin's filled with graffiti?
Not necessarily. No, you didn't tell us that.
It really disturbed me because it's this funny thing. Like, they really love their graffiti in Berlin, or else they're just used to it. But it's everywhere. Everywhere. On every building, there's graffiti, and it looks disgusting.
Does that come from the wall?
I don't know. It might be. Probably. Maybe it's the wall. It's weird. They don't put graffiti on statues?
No, surely not monuments and things like that.
No, historic and government buildings, for some reason, they know not to do, unless they wash it off every day, but there's no graffiti on those. There's none on historical monuments or, you know, statues or old things. So they're respectful graffiti artists, but there's graffiti everywhere. You see an apartment block. And
some people think graffiti looks cool, like they'll make a feature wall. I don't like it.
Yeah, and they call graffiti artists.
We've got a graffiti wall here. I mean, like, all of our passages are
but that's signatures and things. That means something. I can't even read this funny
it's weird.
It's like
signatures, essentially. It's like they call it tags. It's my tag.
Look at you down with the lingo, Ben.
Yeah,
let me see your fingers.
I just reckon they sell probably more.
See your bag.
I think they must sell more
hardware stores must
spray paint.
Yeah, than anywhere in the world. They sell that stuff there. Anyway. All right, so lots to talk about and lots to get into this morning. We've got the five things you need to know. We're going to talk, I'm sure, about Serena and Ben's sport later on. You've got lots to say about that. Got a couple of things on the agenda. So if you're ready to go, I'm ready to go. You want to hear some things you need to know?
Mm-hmm.
All right, five things you need to know. Let's start with number... What comes before five? Number one.
Yes,
my maths is great.
True.
Yeah, man was arrested after knife attack in Paris, and he wounded 7 people. Paris is becoming dangerous. Paris is out of control, man.
Yeah, it's pretty scary.
It used to be the most civilized city in the world. It's become like a slum. Paris is looking really shit. I watched a video the other day of a tourist who'd been there now this year. He says it's a fucking disgrace. Paris is, it's really, it's horrible.
I went decades ago, and I really didn't enjoy it. Everywhere was filled with urine. It stank.
Urine?
People were peeing all over the place.
Yeah, yeah. They put up these pissoirs.
Pissoir?
All over Paris. They've got these things. In fact, a listener of ours sent me an email about that a couple of months ago. They're open-air ones. So you just whip it out and pee. They're trying to persuade people not to just pee against the walls and the streets. I mean, it does smell of urine.
Yeah.
Like, you would think that wouldn't be a tough sell.
No, and especially in a beautiful city like Paris, but the place is going downhill badly.
Because if you piss against a building in London, they kind of lock you up a bit, don't they?
Yeah.
So.
Oh, no, you can't urine. I mean, the people do. They do it at late at night or whatever.
Yeah. After and a kebab.
You can smell, like, that's one of the smells of Europe, is the smell of piss down an alley. You know, drunk people stumbling home and they just whip it out and take a piss. It's always men. Women don't piss on walls.
No.
It's too much of an ordeal.
I may have once or twice.
Don't rule them out just yet.
But isn't it like a major ordeal to...
It is. No, I actually did it behind a car once in a parking lot. Behind the boot, and I was actually holding onto the boot for support.
Fine.
When I was getting up and pulling my pants up, I saw there was someone in the car just looking at me.
Oh, that's so embarrassing.
Just wave and walk away.
Well, so even more awkward is when you started saying, don't stop, don't stop.
But yeah, it's men. It's disgusting. So Paris is just hell right now. It's not a great place to go. If you want to go there on a romantic weekend, you can't even get to the Eiffel Tower anymore. They put this barricade around it. But this dude wounded 7 people in a knife attack in downtown Paris late on Sunday, adding there was no initial indication the attack was linked to terrorism. It's probably just some deranged homeless person, you know? Some loony who's just gone crazy. 4 of the victims suffered severe wounds. That's what they're saying. A guy was bussed with over 400 Mandrax tablets outside of Kimberley. Mm. Hey, first of all, I don't even know that Kimberley has an economy. Who has money to buy Mandrax in Kimberley? What the hell are you doing with this?
It's not exactly like a drug hotspot, is
it? Come to Joburg, you idiot. You want to sell your drugs, don't sell them in Kimberley.
That's all at margins, Gareth.
Well, I didn't know Mandrax was still a thing.
Yeah, that's also a bit sad.
You go to towns with no glamour, you still got the old horrible drugs.
Yeah, that's true.
So shift them somewhere.
The South African Police Crime and Intelligence Tactical Response Unit, believe it or not, we have one of those, is investigating a case of drug trafficking after a suspect was arrested on Saturday outside of Kimberley. The police searched the 58-year-old. What's a 50? What are you doing, Grandpa? With 400 Mandrax tablets and money stored in his jacket. It's understood the drugs carry a street value of 20,000 rand. Dummy.
Maybe anyway. He disappeared sometime years ago, and he's just found his way back, and he hasn't changed the times at all.
Yeah, he's still dealing in 80s drugs.
He's probably got to be 58.
He's probably got the old notes with the animals on them, and you know.
Or it's just slightly colder than usual, so he pulled the jacket out of storage. It's like, oh, it's from my drug dealing days.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, it was in his cupboard the whole time. He forgot about, oh, now I've got to get rid of this Mandrax. I wonder if I can still sell this on the
street. People always say, oh, what a surprise. I found 100 ront in a pair of old jeans.
I found a pack of Mandrax tablets. Mandrax. That really is an old school drug.
Yeah.
The African National Congress has described claims by the Sunday Times that some of the party's senior members had a meeting to plot the removal of Cyril Ramaphosa as sensational hot air and senseless gossip, which means it probably happened. You know, the minute the ANC say something, you've got to believe the opposite. That's what we've learned. Mm. Like when Nomvula says, we'll just make the RAND improve. We know the opposite's going to happen. She's going to fuck it up. In her limited way, she understands that little about the world. So when they say that they had a meeting to plot, when the Sunday Times says that, and usually you don't even trust them, but when the ANC says definitely didn't happen, it did. Sunday Times reported a group in the ruling party, including former President Jacob Zuma, is plotting in secret to unseat Ramaphosa by challenging the Nasrec conference on the basis of mass irregularities at branch meetings. Well, did you see that clip of Jay-Z?
No.
I'm sure you... if you followed me on Instagram, you would have seen it.
The one where...
Where he says he's still available?
Yeah, but that's taken out of context, obviously. He was talking about a rugby tournament that someone got him to talk about, and he was joking. He's saying, I'm still available if I want... You need someone to play rugby.
I don't know so much. That guy.
It is, because I saw the whole clip.
Yeah, you never know with that
He's such a party pooper, Ben.
Yeah, shut up, Ben. We're building a narrative here,
and
Ben.
I have 17 recommendations on LinkedIn for that profile.
Party pooper.
I thought it was funny because he says he's very much available, the old Gedleyegi,
to play rugby.
Need a substitute. I am indeed available.
Oh, he's so creepy.
That's why he's such a
I've forgotten how creepy he was.
So, yeah, he's a real creeper. He's like a molester. That's the kind of voice a molester. Yeah. Definitely.
He sounds like an uncle there.
Duh. Anyway, the paper claims that a meeting was attended by Secretary General Ace Magashule and former Northwest Premier Supra Mahumapelo, and it was convened. Well, you know those two are as slimy as can be, right? Them along with David Makura. It's totally possible. These guys were plotting against Cyril before he was president. So why wouldn't they carry on now? Anyway, I mean, I don't feel sorry for Cyril because he's kind of a disappointment in the biggest way as well. And he's missed every opportunity, just like he did on his way to Nazareth. He's missed every opportunity to take the high ground. He's just cowardly. He seems to me to be the kind of guy who's trying to cobble together something, but he hasn't got a spine to do it with. It's really sad. Apparently British Airways got hacked. Hackers obtained the credit card details of about 380,000 BA travelers during a breach this summer, making them vulnerable to financial fraud. How do you like that?
Sure.
I mean, you know, your information, you don't even know what kind of dodgy people have got your info these days.
Well, we kind of do, but we just choose to ignore it and go on with life.
And what they can actually get from you from the weirdest of places. So, very long story short, my cousin was hijacked a few weeks ago.
Oh, no. I'm sorry.
And
that's so shit.
Yeah, it was a crap situation. But one of the things was that he had his cards in the car.
Oh, so when, his business cards?
Yeah. So when they drove off with, and literally has his name, his surname, and his details.
No. So now they could find his office, they could find his house.
And because of how sly these people are, they actually called him 2 weeks after the incident and they pretended to be these police officers who work at this police station. And they say, excuse me, sir, your car has been found.
Oh, God.
And he gets all so excited about it. Oh. And so they were actually able to con him out of like 2,000 rands to say like, no, this is a fee that needs to be paid to the pound.
He's lost his car.
Yeah, yeah.
And now they're going to swindle him out of another 2,000. You know, there's a lot of very smart criminals.
I really actually said that. This is admirable to a certain extent, but this is how people are. They'll be able to hack and get certain information out of you. Who knows what people have on us right now?
Jesus, that's
horrible. Not clever enough to do that type of stuff.
Well, you know your information's probably on some horrible database somewhere, and that's why you get those unsolicited messages from people saying, you know, do you want to open up a bank account? I mean, the only calls. I got 3 calls from South Africa while I was in Germany because everybody who I work with knew I was away. And people don't just call these days. They WhatsApp you or they message you or they email you. The 3 calls were all people trying to sell me something.
Yeah. Mm.
I was like, I'm in Germany. I don't want to hear from you now. I don't ever want to hear from you. And I'm on some database, obviously. That's how they get my number.
But it's a little bit too close to home a lot of the times. I mean, Zuckerberg aside, I know from the nature of what I do, I have good months of the year and I have bad months of the year. Bad months of the year, I get messages saying, would you like debt relief? Blah, blah, blah. Like, how the hell do they know that?
It's your bank. Your banks are telling people.
They're selling our shit to other people. Like,
yeah, but it's even
dodgy.
Sometimes it's not
stuff.
As technical. You know, when you sign in at security booths, either to visit a complex or
I always put a
business park, those numbers are sold.
I always put fake stuff on there.
Really?
I say M Mouse, Mickey Mouse, every time. Nobody even reads it. The security guard has never looked at it and gone, oh, sir, you are not Mickey Mouse. They don't ask. And then finally, our last story for this morning, a tearful Grace Mugabe has reportedly declared a renewed friendship with President Emmerson Mnangagwa a few days after the president chartered her a plane from Qatar. Well, of course, they're friends.
The president chartered her a plane from Qatar.
Yes.
Okay, so he's putting state funds to good use straight away.
Yes.
Cliche.
Of course, you know why they're friends? They've both learnt how to screw the Zimbabwean people out of their lives, their tax, their happiness, their future prosperity and their children's future prosperity. That's why they're friends. They're like, you know, Emerson, you and I, we should be friends. We've both learned how to screw these people. And if we can screw these people together, let's think of it as a partnership. That's our business. We're politicians. We screw people out of their livelihoods. Put it there, Emerson. And he spits in his hand and they shake. That's what they do, these slimy fucking politicians. So there we go. Grace Mugabe and he are reunited as friends. Isn't that nice? Aren't you proud of them sorting out their differences and getting together and being friends with each other again? Oh, isn't that nice? Grace Mugabe and me Emerson, we both can fuck the public and we'll use their money. Would you like a plane? I'll fly you from Qatar where you spent some of our money again. Yes, it's beautiful. It's reunited. Isn't that lovely? All right, let's get into some other stuff. Ben's got some sport for us. I'm just going to quickly throw in that Bitcoin is at $6,304 and Ethereum is below $200 at $198. Bargain basement, which means if you bought Ethereum last year, right now, you hate yourself. But don't let me put you off. It is Monday. There are lots of other reasons to be upset today, like the cold. It's very cold.
So cold.
So cold.
And the sport.
And the sport. Well, let's get into that, Ben. Let's not mess around. Here he is, Ben Karpinski. What do you have for us?
Well, no one really knows who won the US Open because everyone's talking about Serena Williams. The box blunder again. Mm-hmm. Again. And Bafana against Libya.
Against Libya? They don't even have a government.
Well, we'll get to that in a bit. So Serena Williams, she did not have a good time of things. She was looking for, obviously, a record Grand Slam. I think for her sixth US Open, I think 24th in total. Yeah. But it all came crashing to shit because Naomi Osaka won. But did she? Well, no one really won this match because it all paled into insignificance with boos and jeers. And it was just tears. It was just dreadful. Now, if you didn't watch the match, you woke up on Sunday morning thinking, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah.
Well, to try and press you this down as much as I can, and bear with me here, Serena Williams was basically given a caution for receiving coaching during a match. Her coach was apparently making coaching signals to her, mm-hmm. of which she did not see any of this, nor does she admit to any of this, and she says she's not a cheat. She then had words with the umpire, and she then lost a key service game. She then smashed her racket on the ground, was given another sort of violation, whatever these things are, and then she was actually docked a point and then docked a game for verbal abuse. She verbally abused the umpire, calling him a thief and a cheat, and that she was being unfairly dealt
with. Well, do you want to hear the clip? I've got it here for you, Ben.
Go for it.
All right, here's Serena telling the umpire that he owes her an apology. This is pretty hardcore stuff. Take a listen to this. This is live at the Open final, right?
Get coaching. How can you say that? You owe me an apology. You owe me an apology. I have never cheated in my life. I have a daughter, and I stand what's right for her, and I've never cheated. And you owe me an apology.
Oh, my God. And listen to the crowd. Look, first of all, that's not the Serena we like.
No, that's wrong.
What the hell's going on there?
That's not good. Okay, so just look at these incidents in isolation, because there's two things going on. Let's look at them in isolation. The ref, the umpire, was completely in the right. He acted to what he's there for. Mm-hmm. He is a umpire. He's not a Serena fan. Now, right. I've got to use those words to sink in here, because Serena is the Beyonce of tennis. When she walks out into that court, everyone loses their shit. Everybody wanted her to win. They couldn't care about the, in quote, Japanese girl, because no one knew who she was, let's be honest. So when the ref umpire person did this, well, he was in the wrong. No matter what happened, he was in the wrong. So that's in isolation. Great. Now, Serena's outburst and all that kind of stuff, it comes from the fact that people blow so much smoke up her ass. And
she started to buy it. She started to believe it.
To a degree, yes. Yeah. Okay, so we've got to acknowledge the obvious here. Let's look at this situation in a slightly broader scheme of things, right?
Mm.
if this wasn't a men's match, and yes, this is what everyone's saying, and I totally agree with it, you will never have seen an umpire sanction someone as quick as this. In men's tennis, there's a lot of sort of conversation, there's a lot of massaging of incidents, there's a lot of outbursts, everyone's going, oh, you know, it's just, he's an emotional guy, and he'll settle down. Straight away, it's a woman, she's just having a meltdown. Look at, like, there's been so much cuck being leveled at these umpires over the years.
I don't know. I
mean, have you ever heard a game getting taken away from someone, Gareth?
I don't know about that because I've never paid close enough attention. Well, but I remember
know from what you've seen.
I remember that McEnroe behaved like a little shit and people said he was having meltdowns and he was...
Was a game taken away from him?
I don't know.
Did you see these points getting taken away
Wasn't
from
it?
Him? No.
Okay, so maybe there was a little draconian.
This guy jumped so swiftly onto these things that at no stage was there a warning or a conversation. That dipshit Krikrios... He has a meltdown every single game, and everyone calls him tempestuous, or he's not living up to his potential just yet. He's a rambunctious... No, he's a prick.
Okay.
And in this tournament, in this very tournament, the umpire got down and said, look, can you just try a little bit harder because, you know, you can actually really overcome this. Massage the guy, coach the guy, didn't say, right, code violation, you're a prick.
So you think maybe... It was a little bit of a victimization of Serena.
Look, I don't think Serena was acting on behalf of women's rights when she was having that what you just played now.
Yeah, that's a terrible thing to do.
I think in a very sort of smart, because Serena's smart, she's a real superstar, and she knows everything about the sport. Mm. I think she then latched the whole women's rights thing on afterwards, which was clever. But if you look at this, again, the tournament, in the greater scheme of things, a woman changes her shirt on court, and she's given a code violation. Djokovic stands there, sits there with his nips out for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So the whole thing about this is about double standards. Yes, Serena was wrong and all those kinds of things, but it almost seems inconvenient when a woman wants to have these meltdowns, or, as they're saying, meltdowns. In men's tennis, it's often seen as just an emotional outburst. So although I will not back Serena in this, even though I'm a massive Serena fan, I think the game does have double standards. And issues like this are really good. So why is it that she is penalized so quickly? And yes, she was acting like an absolute jackass. I mean, you should never have to break a racket.
Mm.
Obviously, when you get to a later stage in your career with so much riding on it, you don't have your emotions in check as it was. Serena does have form with this kind of stuff before. Twice before in the US Open, she's had violent outbursts with umpires and chair officials, threatening violence. She says, this one woman, I'm going to ram this ball down your throat.
Oh, really?
She has. But then again, we also can't be too horrible of these people. They are... athletes, okay?
Yeah, it's competition.
All that matters in their life is to win. But the fact she's bringing up her daughter on court, that kind of stuff,
yeah,
it's a big match.
Who cares about that?
But I think if you look at the greater scheme of things in this whole incident, is that I just think women do get a bit of a rough ride with this kind of
all
stuff.
All right. Look at Ben standing up for Serena.
Well, I'm standing up for the whole situation of double standards because we've got to see sport in that light. You can't have, the women don't make outbursts and they just have their little 2-3 sets and then they make their way for the men. No, it means as much to these people as anyone else. Serena needed to win that match.
Here's Serena telling the crowd not to boo Naomi Osaka, which I think is, I mean, the crowd were doing that they were booing this poor girl, and she won. What a horrible... victory. Apparently she was in tears afterwards.
She didn't know what to say or do.
Because no one wanted her to win, and she was just, you know how strong you have to be to take on Serena in the first place. Second of all, the crowd hates you.
Yeah.
Third of all, you win. And then you don't know how to take your victory because people are being...
Well, she apologized for winning.
Jesus, I mean, how horrible is that? Listen to this quickly.
I don't want to be rude, but I don't want to interrupt. I don't want to do questions. I just want to tell you guys, she played well, and this is her first Grand Slam.
What a shame. She looks a wreck, this Naomi Osaka.
I know you guys were here rooting, and I was rooting too, but let's make this the best moment we can, and we'll get through it, but let's give everyone the credit where credit's due, and let's not boo anymore. We're gonna get through this, and let's be positive. So.
Wow, she makes it sound like she's going through the Holocaust. I mean, it's just a fucking tennis match, honey.
Well,
I know for you it's everything, but wow, we're going to get through this, and like, who? What? The crowd need therapy after this?
It's just a tennis match.
Jeez,
well said, right. Gareth. Well said.
Yeah.
But this is the problem in sport when people become too big for the game. And like I said,
jeez.
Serena is like the Beyonce of tennis. She has become too big for the game. Not by her own doing. She's great. We said it so many times in the show that she is probably one of the greatest sports people. Not women's sports people of history, sure. But these moments, and then the crowd is like that, and everyone's on her side, and you can't say anything against her. That's bullshit. And I saw a couple of journalists coming out and saying, like, that was just tempestuous, that was terrible. She completely ruined the moment. And they are getting absolutely torn to shreds by the mob.
Yeah, well, the mob, who cares what the mob thinks? Yeah. Who needs to respond to that idiocy?
You know, and for Serena to feel like she can say to this umpire, you will never, ever be in one of my games ever again. Mm. When sporting people start saying things like that, right or wrong, whatever the situation is, I don't think that's particularly good. It's not a good look, and you don't have that control. Sure, you've been given a bit of a rough deal, although to the letter of the law. But yeah, so I just think it's two situations here. It's the clinical side of things, and also with this whole coaching thing. Serena's coach, who Serena did not see apparently give any sort of movements, whatever. He says, everyone does the coaching thing. Like, you've often seen at Wimbledon those boxers, and they're always doing stuff. Have you ever seen a coach ever say coaching violation, whatever? It's blatant with all the signals, all that kind of stuff. But yet Serena in the final, she gets called up in it straight away. No warning, no nothing. It's just take this violation.
All right, so I'm sensing a bit of you weren't impressed, but you're supporting that this might not be horses for courses and so on.
Yeah, I just think there should be a great understanding of everyone's good and bad. I think this US Open was a watershed moment within this whole equality thing. People have always been rabbiting on about the equal pay.
Sean says, Ben, McEnroe was actually disqualified from the Australian Open for his cuck behavior once. Disqualified.
Oh, nice.
All right, so there's a little history lesson from Sean.
Very nice, Sean. Thank you for that.
Putting you in your place, like the umpire put Serena in hers.
In my years of watching tennis as me as a human rather than archived, I've just never seen someone having a game taken away from them or a point or whatever. But hey, so yeah, there's definitely two sides to that story. There's one side to the Springbok story. They're cuck. Oh, man. I mean, they played against a woeful Australian team. An already woeful Australian team who then kind of lost their three most pivotal players. They're Locke Coleman, gone. Wow. Pocock, gone. Israel, I hate gays, Folau, also gone. Before they even kicked off. And what did they do? The box conceded a try straight away. It was just diabolical. They had the ascendancy in the forward pack. First half was looking good. They should have had a mighty lead going into the break. They had a one-point lead because they fluffed it. Bongi Mbonambi missed a key line-out throw, which gave them a seven-pointer. He was then yanked straight off that. But as Rossi Erasmus said after the match, I didn't substitute him because of the line-out throw. I substituted him because he was tired. All of our players play until the absolute limit. And once that happens, they then get substituted straight away. So that was Bongi's limit, apparently, according to the coach. And we've got to go with that. I mean, the coach knows these people. He knows the strategy. And I think for a lot of the time that this game was going to be played, Bongi was going to play one half of rugby. You say, look, he hasn't played a lot. We're going to give him everything and leave nothing out there for the first half, and we see how it goes. So I think let's also put that fire out, because people are also saying this, you know, when a black player does something wrong, he gets substituted. When Faf de Klerk fucks it up again and again and again, he plays 80 minutes. It's just another side story and a side mess. Well, the box then came out of second half, did not score a single bloody point. They just looked woeful. And with that, I think supporters of the Springboks are dying a slow death here. 23-18 against the most lackluster of Aussie teams. Basically, if you just need to get ahead in rugby, just be less shit than the other team, because the All Blacks are the best. I mean, Argentina lost 46-24 to them, and people were saying Argentina played well. That is the gulf between New Zealand and the rest. Anthea, I told you that 15% return on investment every single year, and you turn your nose up at me. These guys are in a different stratosphere, not a different league. There's like, there's science between the All Blacks and everyone else.
Wow. 46-24.
And that was a close game. A close game. Well, Argentina, there's my little patronizing bum tap for you. Bafana, they're playing against Libya. As Gareth said, they don't have a government. They are a nation
It's an anarchy.
Well, yeah. But yet, they come down here. The people, I know we give the box cuck. We really do.
Yes.
I've just given it. And I don't feel bad about doing it, or you don't. But the people that Bafana lose to, I mean, we're talking about countries where...
Yeah.
If they've got running water for 3 days of the week, they're doing well. If they've got people who don't work in bars and pull doubles at places where the fans don't work just to make money, we're doing well. And now Libya, the history of this place, and they've sent a football team down here, and they've drawn 0-0 with a bunch of people who play professionally in world-class stadiums with world-class resources. Call me simplistic, but I mean, this is bullshit, is it not? How can we not beat Libya?
Libya.
These guys don't know if they're going to be in war tomorrow or not. come on, is there anything good in sport at the moment? Is there?
I'm
searching, but
Ben, you can stop.
England are playing India. You couldn't care about that because it's the fifth.
All right.
This UEFA Nations Cup is just a whole circle.
By the way, everybody,
jerk.
I'm the umpire. Ben's having a meltdown. I'm going to duck him a game. Sorry.
Okay, sounds a bit sexist, but let's finish with that.
Sexist? Oh. I think we're both men. Aren't we? Jesus. All right, let's get to Anthea. Here she is. She's come in specially this morning to tell you about your money.
She works hard for my money. Anthea, she works hard for your money. Anthea, she works hard for her money. So we better treat her right. Anthea.
All right, here she is. Hi, Anthea. What's up?
Good morning. Still the only asset manager in the country with her own song.
Yes, damn right.
So I think the macro news that I'm going to tell you is probably not new. It's big news, you know. South Africa, second quarter GDP.
The big R word.
That's right.
Recession.
Yeah. So it's a technical recession. And I was going to come in on Friday and talk about how, remind you what a technical recession is and say, BS to the technical word, it really is a recession. But actually this weekend I was in Hyde Park Shopping Center and there did not look like a recession. I could not find a table at my favorite restaurant. People were shopping bags. I was like, is the elite 1% of this country just absolutely not affected by this recession?
They aren't. No, it's Anthea. What's that?
It's called credit cards.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Good point,
yes,
Ben.
Yes, good point, Ben, that people are living on borrowed money.
We'll talk about First Rand put out results later, and Ben's actually probably hit the nail on the head. But it's an interesting phenomenon that's happening. Like the consumer, either the consumer's just completely used to what's been going on for the last 2 years and doesn't care anymore and is still out there and shopping. I don't think we're going to shop ourselves out of a recession. We're not, the consumer is not that healthy. But yeah, it's interesting. Anyway, so the GDP contracted by 0.7%. And you know, the other problem with this is that emerging markets under huge amounts of pressure, and that's got nothing to do with us. I think our recession, those are our own goals. But the emerging market problems we're having with Turkey and Argentina and the fact that we get lumped together with them, that's just bad timing for us. That's really unlucky. And, of course, you've seen the rand, right?
Well, yes. Tell us about that. Where is it at the moment?
To the dollar, 15.27. To the euro, 17.63. And I bought euros a couple of weeks ago with a 15 handle.
Yeah.
Oh, I was like, what happened? And then the pound, 1972.
Oh, it's getting close to 20, huh?
Mm-hmm. So this is not great. So this really puts the SARB in a very difficult position because the Reserve Bank targeting of inflation to 3 to 6%, to do that they need to raise interest rates. But with a weaker rand, an economy under pressure, I can't imagine that they would want to raise interest rates very soon, even though the weaker rand will obviously lead to higher inflation, especially with the oil price still firmly at the $75 or even higher level. And then, of course, Moody's came out. They downgraded our growth, and now we're all worried about whether or not we're going to get downgraded again. So this like perfect storm seems to be forming around South Africa.
Don't you wish
again.
Jacob Zuma was back? It almost seems like it was better.
Well, he's still available, so he says.
Right, exactly.
Jeez, yes, let's bring that back.
Yeah. All right. So, in other words, and the government, what about this ridiculous subsidizing the petrol price, which is going to save us like 5 cents a litre?
Yeah, well.
It's nothing.
So it's going to
go up again.
Well, exactly.
So they're going to save us 5 cents.
No, they're saving us 25 cents. They're putting the petrol price up by 5 cents a litre, and it should have gone up between 25 and 30 cents a litre. So they're subsidizing the 25 to 25 cents, call it. And you know it's costing us 400 million rand. So you think you're saving on petrol, but if you're a taxpayer, there's 400 million rand in that budget that is now needs to a hole that needs to be filled. And of course, we've got October medium-term budget policy speech coming up. So the ratings agencies are going to be watching us very carefully.
All right, let's move on to the companies. Maybe there's
lots
some news
of companies.
There.
Whoa, right. lots of news there. So the first one was Supergroup. I mean, so this is a supply chain management, fleet management, transport and logistics company. Mm-hmm. They bought a UK company called SG Fleet in 2016. They reported 154% operating profit recovery.
Wow.
For the year. That is just phenomenal.
Some people know how to milk a dry economy, huh?
Incredible. They've done fantastically well to bounce back. It's a company that really struggled a couple of years ago. And so now they've managed to really make some sizable acquisitions. They've really got quite a strong balance sheet, so still sufficient resources to make more sizable acquisitions. They're on a one-year forward price earnings ratio of 10 times, and by now you know that that is cheap. So there's your stock pick of the week.
All right.
Supergroup.
Tell me about Discovery.
Okay, so Discovery, wow, phenomenal set of results, believe it or not, in this environment. Normalized diluted headline earnings per share up 16%. No doubt that Chinese business, Ping An, doing incredibly well. Increased profits 84%. And this is now what? I mean, the third year I'm telling you about Ping An and how every year they just increase profits. They've increased Discovery, their disclosure, so their IRR, their internal rate of return came in at 26% compared to their risk-free hurdle rate of 10%. They've reduced their cash buffer a little bit from 2.1 billion rand to 1.7 billion rand, but still very comfortable. And then the other important thing about Discovery is that the Registrar of Banks has previously, because you know Discovery are applying for their banking license. Mm-hmm. So the Registrar of Banks said, well, actually, if they're doing that, they're going to have to buy First Rand's 25% stake in the Discovery card and take their Discovery card onto their own banking license. That's going to cost them a whopping 1.8 billion rand. They're not going to use the cash, don't worry. They're going to issue new shares to do that. They've still got time. And then, I mean, First Rand also reported also a fairly decent set of results, headline earnings up about 8%. But this is what was interesting that Ben noted on the credit card side, or the credit side, I should say. Retail advances increased by 7%. That's the best in all the four banks. I mean, in this tight economic environment, who is giving the consumer credit? Apparently, it's First Rand. So if you're looking for a loan. And then not only that, but they managed to lower their credit loss ratio. In other words, bad debts. I don't actually know how they're doing it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
All right. Let's just hope Marcus Huest is in charge of their books, otherwise there's a problem.
Yeah. Marcus.
What a douchebag. Did you hear
him? You saw
him
in Parliament.
Good Lord.
Oh, my.
Sounded like someone who's just come out of. Yeah.
Totally. You know,
what's going on there? Did you watch that thing and did you have a tear in your eye?
Oh, my.
You couldn't believe you were lied to.
Could not believe it. And everything about it, you know, the way he wouldn't take responsibility for it, he's blaming everybody else. Mm-hmm. He has no shame, though.
None.
It's shocking.
And the fact that he sounds like he's just like crawled out of primary school education, tongue-tied and hardly able to string a sentence together. The guy's barely literate.
Well, we always knew that about him. We had a joke in the office because when he presents results.
He sounds so shit. Huh? Yeah, yeah. I didn't realize he sounded like that. He's like the kind of... sounds like a poor white.
Our favorite line is,
over to you, Steve, in America.
Oh, shit. So you guys had jokes. Look at you. You guys had jokes, huh? Wow.
No,
all right.
Not great.
All right, let's wrap it up with the rest. Capitec?
And the other thing, Capitec put out a trading statement, and they're saying that headline earnings per share will grow between 18 and 21%. And again, it has to do with this lower... credit impairments or net interest income, which we're looking for. So, yeah, lots of companies reporting locally. We have to talk about some of the offshore stuff, Gareth. Have I got
all
time?
All right, yes. You know what? You can go.
Okay. So first, I want to start with Amazon because they became the second $1 trillion listed U.S. company after Apple. It's only taken them 24 years.
Sure.
I know, right? I mean, there's so many interesting things about this because American retail spending is still 90% bricks and mortar, and yet Amazon is streaks ahead of the other companies.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
People are really buying into the idea.
They're online shopping, are you saying?
Yeah, they're banking on that will be the way we all end up shopping. That's what they're really saying.
That's exactly right. Yes. And that also that Amazon has this amazing propensity to consolidate and to grow. They've really spent their last 22 years reinvesting in the company. And it's only in the last 2 years that you've actually seen profits coming through and the real growth happening. If you added up the top 14
big box. Can you imagine not being profitable for 20 years? That's a tall order.
Yeah,
stay in business. Not profitable for 20 years.
Not giving up.
I mean, that just shows you nothing happens overnight.
So, and if you added up the 14 top kind of big box retailers, they call them, so anything from Walmart to AutoNation, they would make up Amazon in its entirety. So change of guard there, right?
Right.
And then Jack Ma announced on Thursday or Friday, that he's stepping down as CEO of Alibaba to focus on philanthropy and his first love, education.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Obviously, after meeting Sia, that was the next possible step.
I beg your pardon?
Anthea, are you shocked that I hang out in these circles?
No, not at all.
Yeah, a few weeks ago, while he was in the country, we spoke. I really told him that, you know, he must go back to his first love, and I'm glad he took my advice.
Look at that. Oh. Now, you've got an exclusive here. Sia was the one who put this idea in Jack Ma's head.
Even
is that good for Alibaba?
Many.
I mean, they must be a little upset that he's stepping down.
So, yes, I think Alibaba will come under pressure a little bit because of it. And, it's you know, he's not just going to walk away. He's got... kind of support in place, but it's a shame. You know, it's a company that he started in 1999, so it's taken him 19 years to build a $420 billion company. Not bad, actually.
Sure. Not bad at all.
And he's only 54 years old. He says he might go back to teaching. And then, of course, lastly, our very own Enfant Terrible, Elon Musk. What is the boy up to? This time,
he went on Joe Rogan, which just shows you, first of all, how podcasts are now the thing, right? I mean, you didn't believe me up to now. Here's the proof that you've been looking for, douchebag. There are people, when we started this 4.5 years ago, said, there's no way this podcast thing will ever work. People don't have data. People are too expensive. Nobody knows how to use their phone. Well, look at this. Joe Rogan gets Elon Musk in there. Elon Musk smokes a fat joint on the show, and now people are losing their shit. Like, this has never...
Totally.
It's never happened before. Like, people in California are allowed to smoke weed. You didn't realize that?
So I think if it had been a once-off incident, because you know he tweeted that he wanted to take the company private at $420 a share, right?
Right.
And if he had done that, and the share was trading at about that level, and then he'd gone and smoked weed, I think it would have been funny, actually. I think it would have been like a cool look at Elon Musk.
But he's accused of insider trading.
Ah, but that's the problem. Ah. So it's a combination of kind of now it's insider trading, because the share was only trading at $369 a share when he announced this private takeout. And then he cried on some other show and said he was taking Ambien and that he's under pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And then after his Joe Rogan episode, two of his top executives walked out.
Well, the umpire from the Serena Williams match has just called up and said he's going to dock Elon Musk a billion for having a meltdown.
Oh, no, that's already happened. The share's down 30% since his tweet.
30%?
That is so
interesting. In a couple of weeks,
The
market doesn't.
Everybody thinks these billionaires are such geniuses, and then they have very human things happen to them, and they do very human things, and suddenly they're just like us.
And interestingly enough, then we hold it against them, as you can see with
people. The
30%.
Elon, Serena, pick your target. There's no superhuman in the world.
But then the stoners, avid stoner supporters, supporters.
They don't have any money. The problem with the stoner voter base is they never get up off the couch and actually do anything. So if you're looking for them to vote for you or to put their money into your business, stoners never do anything.
Well, they can't, except sit on the couch and eat.
Yeah, they've got the munchies, and they're watching like 80s music videos and laughing the whole time.
So you're saying it's not okay for this stoner to run a $45 billion company?
Well, I don't know that he's a stoner. There are lots of functional.
No, he's not.
There are lots of functional drug users, but I think people are overreacting. It's just, you know, it's another. And he's doing this on purpose. He's an agitator. I think he's having fun. He's having fun. He's got billions of dollars. He's started and lost money. He's made money out of nothing. He's a genius.
Just an update, that Joe Rogan Experience with Elon Musk on YouTube, 8.2 million views currently.
There we go.
That interview.
See? That's more than CNN gets every other week.
Every other year.
Yeah, it's absolutely
true. 8 million more investors for him.
All right, thank you, Anthea. Thanks, very good. There's Anthea Gardner with the money shot. While we're talking about podcasts, what does it mean to be a man in today's world? Join Craig Wilkinson and Khalil Osiris for a conversation about masculinity that you and everyone else needs to hear, especially in this country. This raw and authentic series of 6 podcasts provide profound insights into why men behave the way they do. Do you want to hear a little clip?
Sure. I'll
play you this quickly, give you an idea of what's going on that show. Unpack the 3 core desires at the heart of every man. The question every boy needs answered on his journey to manhood. The 4 big lies about masculinity. What wounds the masculine heart? And the one thing every man wants from women more than sex. Man-to-Man Talks, brought to you by Carling Black Label. Drink responsibly, not for sale to persons under the age of 18. It's available now on the cliffcentral.com website or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen to this as part of the show. One of the episodes, and you've got to go and download the whole lot.
Over a short period of time, I went from being the kid who was the ideal student to the one who was the problem in the school, the problem in the community. And
this is Khalil Osiris, by the way.
Ultimately, that landed me, that crime, that or rebelliousness matriculated to crime, and that crime landed me in jail. To be 17 years, and I was 17 years old, you have to understand.
That is some age to go to
jail,
man.
And think of it. It's June. It was June 1976.
God.
So the same time that Soweto here in South Africa was exploding, I in America was on my way to prison to serve a 5-year sentence. I didn't just go to prison. I ended up in maximum security. And I'll tell you this. When you're 17, you think you're a man until you meet men.
Now, you want to hear the rest of that story?
Ooh-wee.
That's some good shit right there.
Sure.
Take a listen to this. Listen, we plug and promote a whole lot of podcasts. These new series are the things that I'm excited about.
Mm.
This is where we're going. This is where this business is going. And people are loving this. They're eating it up. Go and listen to Man. You won't be sorry. It's brought to you by Carling Black Label. They're also trying to get involved with having these difficult conversations. It's obviously really important in South Africa, more than almost anywhere else in the world. It's available on the cliffcentral.com website or wherever you get your podcasts. Go and subscribe. I keep telling people, best way to do it, go on to iTunes. You've got the podcast app. Subscribe there, and then you only have to press one button, and they all download automatically. It's such a pleasure. All right, when we come back, we're going to get stuck into some of the stories of the day. It's Monday. Things are going to happen, said by Sia. We've got to go. I'm going to take said by Sia in the next hour. There's no time now. We've had Anthea.
Oh, gosh, it's 10 past 7.
Yeah, exactly.
Jeez.
All of that's coming. Lots to look forward to.
CliffCentral.com.